Chapter 20. Tom doesn't wake up when the first window breaks. He's getting the best night of sleep he's had in months, possibly years, with Peter tucked up against him. It's not until he hears shouting that he claws his way back to consciousness, looking around blearily and wondering what the fuss is about. Then the smoke alarm goes off, and instantly he's 100% awake as he throws back the blankets and stumbles to his feet. He's halfway to the door when he realizes Peter isn't following him. He half turns back and sees Peter still sitting in the bed, eyes wide and body rigid. "Peter, come on!" Tom doesn't blame him for reacting like this, but there isn't time for it. He grabs Peter by the wrist and yanks him to his feet. Peter staggers after him, and Tom tows him down the stairs. He's surprised to see the rest of the pack all gathered in the living room, rather than having made a break for it, although the back door is already open. "Come on, kids, we need to..." "We can't," Derek says hoarsely. "What do you mean we..." Tom comes up against the back door and finds his way blocked by an invisible wall. "It's Mountain Ash," Derek says. His face is deathly pale. "It's used to block supernatural creatures." Tom's first, completely irrelevant thought escapes from his mouth. "Wait, so this whole time I was talking about how there was no way to put werewolves in prison, and there totally was? Never mind," he adds hastily. The heat is intensifying as the fire spreads from the sofa where the fire starter had landed to the curtains. The walls are starting to catch. "Okay, how do we break it?" "You can't," Derek says. Despite his words, Erica and Isaac are running around to different windows, trying to force their way through. Tom turns to Peter. The werewolf is standing absolutely still, and Tom isn't even sure he knows where and when he is. He takes Peter by the shoulders and gives him a little shake. "Peter, come on. How do we get out of here?" Peter blinks at him, and his mouth works silently for a few moments, but no sound comes out. "Peter!" Tom shakes him again. "I know this is scary, but I need you to focus. We're going to get out of here. Help me figure out how." "Wait, if it blocks supernatural creatures, then Boyd or I can break it, right?" Stiles asks suddenly and darts for the back door. "Stiles, no!" Derek shouts and catches Stiles in a dive, throwing him across the room just as gunshots ring out. Tom lets go of Peter and stumbles over to his son. "Are you all right? Are you hit?" he shouts. The noise of the fire is getting louder. Stiles manages to sit up and do a quick self-examination before shaking his head. Tom looks around, wondering why he doesn't hear sirens. Gerard must have taken care of that somehow. Must have bribed dispatch or sabotaged the fire engine. There are a lot of possibilities. Tom can get around that, though. He can call the station directly or call one of his deputies. But when he takes his phone out, it has no signal. He grabs the house phone instead, and there's no dial tone. "Son of a bitch!" There's a crash somewhere distant as something in the structure of the house gives way. "Get down on the floor, everyone," he says, as the thickness of the smoke intensifies. There will be breathable air there for longer. "Peter!" "It's just like back then," Peter whispers. "Everything is the same. I couldn't save them. Joshua tried to break the circle, and they shot him. He died in Talia's arms. And Olivia. The word is more of a moan. Tom shakes him again, harder. He hates doing it. Hates hurting Peter when he's already in so much pain. "Listen to me, damn it. We can find a way out of this. We have to find a way out of this." He looks around at the others. Isaac, Erica, and Boyd are huddled together. Scott is coughing hard while Derek hovers over him. Stiles is grabbing the photographs from the mantle and chucking them out the back door, thinking more of their precious family memories than his own life. "I need you to focus." "I can't." Peter presses both hands against his face. "Yes, you can. I know this is scary, but you're not alone. I'm here with you, and we're going to find a way out of this." There's another crash. Stiles lets out a yelp and staggers backwards as one of the bookshelves topples. "Will you fucking get down?" Derek yells at him, grabbing him and taking him to the floor again. "I can't find the photo album," Stiles shouts back, trying to squirm free. "The one with Mom and Dad's wedding pictures." "Stiles, let it go," Tom says, and his voice cracks. He starts coughing hard and almost can't catch his breath. Something about that seems to jolt Peter back into action. He shoves Tom away suddenly and goes over to the back door. "Gerard," he shouts, "I'll give you what you want. Just let us out of here." Tom crawls over to one of the windows so he can look out into the backyard. Gerard emerges from the forest behind their house, his pace calm and almost slow as he walks over to the house. He steps carefully over the line of mountain ash at the back door and into the house. He's carrying a rifle, as if they might decide to attack him despite the fire, and wearing a smirk that Tom wants to punch right off his face. Peter backs away to let him in, face changing as his fangs come out. "Wait," Tom says. "How do we know he'll let us out afterwards?" "He'll have to," Derek says, shouting to be heard over the noise of the fire. "Once he gets the bite, he'll be a werewolf. He won't be able to get out either. He'll have to call his men off and have them let Stiles break the circle." Tom nods a little. "Okay," he says, helping Stiles sit up. His son's face is ashen, and he's starting to cough hard. There's just no time to debate. Peter doesn't waste another minute. He sinks his fangs deep into Gerard's forearm. Gerard keeps that same smirk on his face, and then takes a step backwards when Peter pulls away. "Now is that so hard?" he asks, and Peter snarls at him. Gerard gets on his radio, saying a few brief words, then glances around. "Stiles, you can break the circle now." Stiles inches out cautiously, obviously still concerned that he might get shot, but nothing happens, and he brushes his hand over the mountain ash. Peter grabs Tom's wrist in one hand and Derek's elbow in the other and practically hurls them out of the house. The teenagers come pouring out after them, all of them staggering onto the back lawn in a variety of disarray. Tom takes several deep breaths of the cool night air, then leans over to check on Stiles, who's still pale and coughing. He seems to be recovering, though. Gerard is standing in the center of the yard, looking down at the wound on his arm with smug pride. Peter is still standing tense and alert, and Tom isn't sure why until Gerard suddenly lifts his rifle and shouts, "Kill them all!" Several things happen instantaneously. Peter staggers backwards as Gerard fires twice, then shifts, not just to Werewolf, but to Alpha, the enormous hulking monster that Tom saw in the woods that fateful night. He knocks Gerard aside with one casual arm, sending him crashing into the house, then grabs Tom around the waist and throws him hard. Tom flies through the air as the gunshots start to ring out and knocks over their backyard table on the way. It doesn't provide much in the way of cover, but it's better than nothing. At the same time as that's happening, Derek and Scott both throw themselves on top of Stiles, shielding him from the gunfire. Isaac and Erica do the same for Boyd. Tom fumbles for his gun automatically, but of course he's not wearing it. He glances at the house before he decides it would be too risky to try to run in and get it. In any case, he's not sure he needs to. Despite the people shooting at them, Peter has charged into the woods with a roar. Tom hears a scream and then a thud, a crash, a snapping noise. Another scream and a burst of rapid gunfire. The noise cuts off abruptly. Everything is quiet except for the noise of the raging fire. Distantly, Tom can hear sirens now. Someone in their neighborhood had finally found a way to get through to emergency services. He looks over at Derek, who's sitting up. There's blood on his shirt, but when Tom shouts, "Are you okay?" he nods. Whatever damage the betas took, they seem to be healing. Peter staggers back into the yard, shrinking back into his usual human form. He's covered in blood and collapses before he can make it all the way over to Tom. Tom jumps over the table and kneels beside Peter in the grass. He's naked, his clothes having been unable to cope with the shift to alpha form, and the injuries aren't pretty. Tom can see that he's been shot at least a dozen times, and two of the wounds have that dark, veined appearance of a wolfsbane bullet. He's willing to bet that those are the two bullets from Gerard. "Tom," Peter rasps, as Tom tugs off his shirt to try to stop some of the bleeding. "Get me that rifle," Tom shouts. "You should..." Peter starts coughing, and dark blood trickles out of his mouth. "Kill me, Tom. You'd make a better alpha." "Shut the hell up," Tom says. He doesn't have time for this. Derek comes over with the rifle, and he's already pulling out the bullets and prying them open. "We need..." "Fire, yeah," Derek says, and jogs back to the house, where there's certainly plenty of it. Tom gently turns Peter enough to see that there are no exit wounds for the two in his chest from Gerard's gun. "Well, this might kill you," he mutters, unsheathing his claws so he can dig out the bullets. Peter lets out a wolf whine, his body bowing as Tom digs into his chest. One hand clutches at Tom's free wrist, hard enough to hurt. Tom barely notices as he extracts the first bullet, then the second. Peter relaxes, panting for breath. Derek comes over with what looks like something that might have been part of their porch at one point, which is still on fire. Tom takes the ash from the bullet and pours it onto the wounds. "Derek," Peter says, his gaze a little glassy, "I know about Kate. Wasn't your fault?" He howls as Tom touches the flame to the ash. It burns white hot for a few moments before sputtering out. Tom rubs the ash into the wounds while Peter gasps for breath. Don't blame yourself. Wasn't..." He has to work to choke out the words. "Wasn't your fault." "Shay," Tom says, smoothing Peter's hair back. "Relax, Peter. Concentrate on healing." The sirens are getting louder, and a few moments later, there are screeching tires. Tom looks between Peter's bleeding body and the house with uncertainty. "Don't worry, Dad, I've got this," Stiles says, trying to get to his feet. Scott grabs him and helps him up, and the two of them stagger around the house, presumably to intercept the emergency response team and keep them from going into the backyard. Tom doubts they'll need to. The house is fully involved at this point. If Stiles tells them nobody is inside, they'll concentrate on making sure it doesn't spread to the neighbors' houses and let it burn out on its own. "Easy, Peter," he murmurs, cradling Peter against his chest. "Just relax. You're going to be fine. Just take it easy." He watches the wounds start to heal, the bleeding gradually slowing to a trickle. Peter's breathing evens out, and the glazed look in his eyes starts to go away. He looks up at Tom like he's just figuring out where he is. Finally, he says, "Are the kids okay?" "They're fine," Tom says. "Good." Peter lunges upwards and kisses Tom on the mouth. There's so much force behind it that he nearly knocks Tom over. Tom is startled, but doesn't pull away. Peter kisses him with a desperate, needy hunger, his hands twined in Tom's hair. When he pulls back a long moment later, Tom is out of breath. "That's what you call taking it slow?" he asks. "Well, in my defense, I've been wanting to do that for a long time," Peter replies. "Almost as long as I've been wanting to do this," Gerard's gravelly voice says, and Tom feels the muzzle of a gun pressed against his temple. He doesn't even have time to feel fear before Peter has grabbed Gerard by the wrist, pushing it upwards so the bullet goes over Tom's head. He twists the rifle out of Gerard's hands and slams it across his knees, and he goes down, howling. "Can you not see that we were having a moment?" Peter snarls. He flips the gun in his hand and brings it up like he's about to bring it down on Gerard's head. Then he hesitates and half turns. Should I kill him? Tom lets out a breath. Do you need to? He asks, letting the "in order to feel safe" go unspoken. Peter appears to consider. No, he finally says. Then no, I think a quick death will be too easy for him. Now that I know about Mountain Ash, I think a long life alone with his thoughts will suit him better. A smile curves Peter's lips, and he nods. So be it. He tosses the gun into the inferno that was once the Stalinsky house. Then he stands, hauling Gerard over his shoulder. He curses and protests, but Peter's strength is far superior. I'll find a place to stash him for a little while. You take care of all of this. I'll see you later. Tom nods. He turns back towards the others as Peter jogs into the woods. He looks to where he's sure there are dead bodies and wonders how he's going to explain this. After a moment, he decides not to. Everyone will be so focused on the fire, it won't matter. He doesn't know if anyone heard the gunfire, if they would be able to differentiate it from the noise of parts of his house collapsing. Derek helps him to his feet. He checks on Isaac, Erica, and Boyd. The latter is a little paler than usual, his human lungs more affected by the smoke inhalation. Isaac and Erica both have some holes in their pajamas, but the wounds they've taken have healed. They go around the house to find Scott comforting Stiles, who's sitting in the back of the ambulance with an oxygen mask over his face. Stiles, it's going to be fine, Tom says, squeezing his shoulder. We're all safe. That's the important thing. But the photo album, Stiles mumbles. All the pictures of you and Mom. I couldn't find it. I have it, Derek says. Stiles and Tom both blink at him, and he flushes pink. I took it without asking. I'm sorry. I wanted it to be a surprise. I was doing a painting. You know, there's that picture of the three of you. When Stiles was 6 and you went to San Francisco. The picture at Muir Woods. Tom, you showed it to me. Said you really liked it, but it had gotten overexposed, so it didn't come out very well. I'm doing a painting of the photo, you know, fixing the colors. So I took the album. Oh my God, Stiles says, wrapping his arms around Derek and hugging him hard. You asshole! Sorry, Derek says, wincing a little and then repeating. I wanted it to be a surprise. I mean, it's almost done at this point. It was supposed to be a thank you gift, you know, for everything you've done for me. Tom reaches out and pulls them both into an embrace. The way you've taken care of Stiles has been more than thank you enough, but I'm looking forward to seeing the painting when you're done with it. He lets go and goes looking for the EMTs. They reassure him that Stiles should be fine, that they're giving him oxygen as a precaution, but he doesn't have any signs of breathing problems. They tell him what to look out for and when he should worry. The other teenagers are clearly fine, and the paramedics don't seem to realize they were inside the house. He confirms with the fire chief that they're not going to attempt to save the Stalinsky house, and is told that he doesn't have to stay. It'll take a few hours for it to burn itself out. He should go get some rest. They walk the half mile to the McCall house. Melissa is waiting for them, and she checks Stiles over quickly and tells Tom she agrees with the paramedics. What they all need now is rest. Where did Peter go? Stiles finally asks, as they're hauling blankets and pillows into a pile. He took Gerard somewhere. I'm not sure where, but I'm not worried about him. What's going to happen to Gerard? Scott asks. He's going to be put in prison for the rest of his life. Okay, but how? Stiles asks. Tom just gives a little smile. Don't worry about that right now. I'm going to make sure it's taken care of. It takes about a week to get everything settled to Tom's liking. The money helps. He has no idea where Peter got that enormous stash of bearer bonds, and frankly, he doesn't want to know. It's better not to ask questions. While they're getting everything set up, they keep Gerard in the Argent House's basement. Chris has equipment, he tells them, which will keep a werewolf disabled. He offers no opinion on Gerard's long-term fate, and Tom doesn't ask for it. Tom keeps two of the pack watching Gerard at all times. On the brief occasion that his mouth isn't duct-taped shut, Tom makes sure either he or Peter is there to keep an eye on him. Melissa, with Chris's assistance, administers the sedative they need to get Gerard moved. Chris comes along so he can close the mountain ash barrier, but agrees that he won't interfere. The little house in the woods has a back porch, and Tom has left the door open. He sits down in a lawn chair and waits. When Gerard regains consciousness, he staggers towards the open door and then fetches up against the mountain ash. He stops and gives Tom a furious look. "Where am I?" "Prison," Tom says. "You've been found guilty of 8 counts of attempted murder, plus some other things. The details probably wouldn't really interest you. You've been given a life sentence. You're cancer-free now, although Peter has assured me that werewolves can and do die of old age-related causes eventually. Still, I'd say you've got probably at least 20 years left in you. That's what you wanted, isn't it?" Gerard looks around, taking in his surroundings. "Doesn't look much like a prison to me." "That's true. The logistics of explaining to a federal penitentiary why you had to be kept in a mountain ash surrounded cell were too unwieldy. So you lucked out and got a house all of your own." Tom folds his hands in his lap and gives Gerard a pleasant smile. "There's electricity and running water. No TV, no phones, no internet. I think Chris threw some books in there somewhere." Gerard narrows his eyes. "This isn't legal." "Who said it was?" "I'm learning to make up my own rules. If you can't be detained legally, I'll do it illegally." "You can't keep me here forever." "Well, you know, actually, I'm pretty sure I can," Tom says with a shrug. "You think people are going to come looking for you? See, here's what happened. After you attempted to murder me and my family, you were arrested and brought to the sheriff's station. You had a stroke in your cell. We rushed you to the hospital, but unfortunately, you couldn't be saved. Not at all hard to believe, since you had terminal cancer. There's a death certificate and everything. Nobody asked many questions. After all, your son identified your body and signed off on all the forms." With a sneer, Gerard says, "You may have gotten my son to go along with this, but..." "But what, Gerard? You think your hunter buddies will have a hard time believing died of his terminal cancer? At worst, they'll think we killed you and want revenge. They're certainly not going to think you went and got yourself a werewolf bite. You're dead, Gerard. Already been cremated. Nobody knows the difference. Your funeral is this weekend. I'll bring some pictures if you want, so you can see who shows up." Gerard says nothing. "The mountain ash barrier will keep you safe and sound," Tom says. "Don't worry about the weather. We put it all in weatherproof piping and then buried it around the property. That way we don't have to worry about it being disturbed. You've got the whole house to yourself. I even included the first foot of the back porch so we can leave things for you without needing to go inside. Your freezer is nice and well stocked with microwave meals. Personally, I hate those things, but hey, they're probably still better than prison food. Chris will come once a week or two and drop off more food, pick up the trash. Maybe if you behave yourself, he'll bring you some crossword puzzles or something. I don't really care. That's up to him." "You can't keep me here," Gerard repeats. Tom continues as if he hadn't spoken. "He'll bring you some fresh fruit once in a while. We don't want you to get scurvy. Peter has assured me that we don't need to worry a lot about the nutritional content of your meals, but still, nothing cruel and unusual. Just boredom. Just endless, empty days to consider what you've done and see if there's a cell in your body capable of feeling remorse." Gerard slams a fist into the mountain ash barrier. "You can't keep me here!" "Don't bother shouting. The nearest neighbors are miles away. I chose this house very carefully. Oh, and by the way, let me make something absolutely clear. I don't care what you do to this place.
Set it on fire, flood the bathroom, break the roof. I don't give a shit. I'm not breaking the Mountain Ash Circle to save you. You set it on fire on the hopes that we'll get you out? Don't hold your breath. Whatever mess you make, you better be prepared to live with it, or to die in it. I'll get out someday, Gerard says, his eyes flaring bright blue, fangs bared. I'll never stop trying to get out. I'll admit I have some concern about that. Maybe you will find a way out someday. But if you do, think very carefully about your next move, because we whipped your ass once, and we'd be happy to do it again. Tom stands up and folds his lawn chair. Enjoy the rest of your life, Mr. Argent. You've more than earned it. With that, he turns and walks away.